adjourn to go into exec session pursuant to pending or reasonably imminent litigation. So I'd like to handle the closed session first and then come back for the water discussion. Hopefully some rest of the council members will show up.
Mayor, on the closed session, David Shaw called and he's stuck in some traffic.
So we can't have it right now anyways.
If we could hold on the litigation portion for a minute.
Okay.
If we could go to the water first, that'd be great.
Then let's start with water. And we'll bring Mr. Crawley and Mr. Geddes up to speed when they get here. So, Mr. Bunker, I think you're going to lead us off in this discussion.
Yes, thank you. Let me switch spots. So the mayor asked if we would touch on our water issues that we foresee this year, and then also which includes irrigation, and then also some storm water issues, which Jeff will talk about here in a moment. But I just wanted to update the city council on the snowpack totals right now. The questions are we going to have enough water? Are we going to have too much water? Are there going to be landslides? Are we going to have flooding? Those are the kinds of issues that we try to foresee early on. And so what we're looking at right now is for our drainage basin, which is the Provo, Utah, Jordan River basin, right now, as of today, they just updated this, we're at 63% of snowpack. So these southern winds that we're having are melting a lot of snow off. We're not doing real great there. In our area, which is the Temp Divide, we're doing better just locally. We're at 85%, which would be the Timpanogos Divide. We were below average last year as well. We did not have significant runoff last year. We don't foresee a significant runoff this year either. And so the bulk of the runoff last year was diverted into all the irrigation systems for the different irrigation companies that take water out of the mouth of the canyon, and we anticipate the same thing, that we would consume all of the runoff that would come through the system, through the American Fork River. And so that happened last year. We didn't have a significant runoff that just went through the debris basin down the river, and we anticipate, because we don't even have average snowpack right now, we have less than average.
David, question on that. I thought we always got a percentage, and if the total amount of water is lower, we just get a lower amount because we still have a percentage. But
yeah.
Do we just have like second choice after certain other users?
So what I'm talking about is spring runoff, which typically exceeds the capacity for the irrigation companies to handle in their ditch systems.
I see.
So we have had years where we've had great snowpack and the spring runoff starts to occur, which is typically May, end of May, and all the irrigation ditches are full. We let the flow come through the debris basin and on down American Fork River and into Utah Lake. So in the past couple of years, we have not had that kind of a runoff. Now, you're correct in the fact that any runoff that does come down, we own, Cedar Hills has shares in the Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company, and a share is not a guaranteed right to a volume of water. It is a share of the total ditch. So we would have a percentage. So in the beginning of the year, we will probably have decent water coming from the American Fork River. So we will get our appropriate shares of water through the irrigation company, Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company, which we will provide to the city. But because there's not even average snowpack, then that means the water will start to wane off. It will dissipate. It will start to decrease as it comes down through the year, as it comes down through the canyon. So we'll get less water through the year. So come July and August, we anticipate that those flows will be cut in half and then cut in half again, just like they did last year. So we do not anticipate flooding. We do not anticipate excessive amounts of moisture in the soil, so our landslide potential is lower. We've had years where that was higher. And again, it's dynamic. It can change. We can get a lot of rain. April has, in the past, we've had very rainy Aprils. That's when we had the landslide up on Sage, was in at the end of April in 2005. And so it can change. We can get a lot of rain in April, but the forecast right now is that we will not. We will be below the average for our water consumption this year, which means we need to conserve water.
How about temperatures? What are the temperatures supposed to be? Do we know?
Jeff, I don't know if Jeff has looked at that. I didn't look at the projected temperatures for next month, but so I'm not sure if it's supposed to be unseasonably hot.
Okay.
But the fact that we don't have average snowpack even worries me a little, just because we need that water. And snow is where we get a lot of our water through the summer. It comes down out of the canyon. That's our storage up there. When we don't have snow up in the mountain, then that means we're not going to have as much water come down the river, which means we have to augment our irrigation with well water. So, good news on the wells. The mayor and I spoke about this morning in the management report. I talked a little bit about it. The wells are both up and running. They're both operational. They are running very well right now. The Harvey well, we did get the variable frequency drive installed. That's going to help that well run very efficiently. The Cottonwood well was able to be energized last week. We got that up and running. The motor sounds really good on that one as well. So I am excited that everything's like it should be for this irrigation season. We dodged a bullet. Had those two wells gone down in the middle of the summer, we would have been up against a wall there. That would have been tough for us. So, but everything looks really good. Everything's running well, just in time for the irrigation season. So that's the water. Anybody else have questions on the water? Landslides, flooding. I think we're just not going to see significant amounts of that this year.
Why don't you take a minute and address? We had a leak on Sunday, and why don't you tell the council how leaks are handled? It's not something that we can predict and go out and discover before they actually happen. It's essentially when they happen, we need to fix them as quickly as possible. So, David, why don't you go ahead?
That's right. The lines that are underneath the streets. It is very difficult to assess the condition of those streets. Well, you know, they're under the ground. The only way we really know is when we dig them up. And so the question, you know, that the mayor posed this morning is, how can we get ahead of those leaks? How can we, you know, be more prepared? And quite honestly, the answer is we're waiting for them to actually leak. So in this case, 2:30 in the morning, a police officer was driving up Cedar Hills Drive, noticed water coming up out of the road. He called dispatch, who called our on-call person. They came out and looked at it and said, yeah, that's definitely a good leak going on for it to come up underneath the asphalt. About 4 or 5 in the morning, they got everything ready to saw cut the road. They started to saw cut the road, and all of a sudden the road just kind of lifted up. I mean, the whole section, 20-foot section of road, just kind of rose up 3 or 4 inches, which means that was – and then more water even came out of the ground. And so we knew it was a big one then. We started to dig up the road, get into it. We noticed that one section of pipe, 20-foot section, had a lateral crack from end to end all the way down the pipe, which means we had to replace it. There was no way to keep it operational even for a short period of time. The problem is that pipe that's in that part of town is a C200 pipe, which is a class of pipe. It's not rated as good as our other pipe that we're putting in. We use a C900 pipe now, which is a thicker walled pipe, so it can handle more pressure. It can handle 150 PSI. And actually, our specs now call for 200 PSI pipe in our city. And so, but this pipe is a little thinner walled. They don't even make that pipe anymore. So we made some of the pipe that we have in the yard work. We're going to have to dig that section back up and do some repair on it for a short period, because what we put in there really isn't the exact size of pipe that was in there before. We needed different gaskets and different clamps to make it work. So we will have to dig that section back up to retrofit the ends. So we're going to do that, but at least we got the system operational. People got water. So in the old part of town, which is you know, sage and oak and willow and all that older part of town, they have this kind, this type of pipe. The laterals are also a plastic pipe, but it's a very brittle lateral, so they snap all the time. Most of our water leaks happen in the old part of town. They usually happen in the winter. They usually happen on a holiday. I don't know why, but they just seem to, and when it's cold. So we were grateful that it wasn't super cold and not a holiday yesterday or on Sunday. But there's really not an easy answer, an easy fix to go through the water system and replace that. We will literally be fixing them as they break. Now, certain sections could last another 10, 20 years, 30 years, you know, but some sections could fail tomorrow. And that's just the nature of that class of pipe. Back then, that old part of town was a county subdivision. It started out as a county subdivision. There were not probably the specifications and standards, engineering standards that we have today. They're much more rigid today. We inspect things today. Ask Mike. He's had a few inspection bills lately. And so we watch projects carefully now to make sure that the right materials are being used and that it is installed properly. Back then, not so much. We've dug some pipes up and we're thinking, how did this ever get put in the ground?
So if they don't make the pipe that exists there now, what do we put in there that will be long term?
So they make a better pipe now. Mm-hmm. So we're buying a thicker walled pipe, a higher class pipe.
Thicker than the one we already put in on Sunday.
The one we put in on Sunday was a C900 pipe, which is our standard now, C900.
That's thicker than what was in there.
And C200 is a thinner walled pipe, and they don't make that anymore.
So what has to be replaced? You said that's a temporary fix.
So they have what's called a bell joint, and it's where one pipe goes inside of another. Mm-hmm. When we stuck our C900, which is thicker walled, inside that pipe, it was so tight, and we made it work. But it really is probably not the best application. So we need to go fix that section to make sure that we don't crack that existing pipe.
So how do you fix it?
We have to dig down and cut it out. We'll have to shut the system down. Okay. We estimate that it'll probably take us 4 hours approximately to do that. So we'll have a shutdown again, which we can pre-notice everyone that we're going to do that. And we'll have to shut the system down for a short time and cut that section out. Put a sleeve in there.
Awesome. David, a question for you. So obviously if you put better pipe in, you know, it's the weak link is
the old section.
Right, the old section. And it's going to continue over the next few years. Is it possible for us to look ahead and maybe save some money over the next X amount of years? And I'm not saying this year, but maybe in 10 years, say, hey, let's just plan on replacing the whole set of pipe, or is it better just to wait till they leak and then we
yeah,
dig them
that's
up?
I mean, if we had leaks every single week that we were digging up, then yes, I would say we would need to just retrofit the system.
And okay. But we're actually not to that point.
We're not to that point. What we would actually do is lay a parallel system right next to the old one.
I did that with the sprinkler system once.
And we would abandon the old one and hook everybody up to the new one. Because to dig up the existing line and replace it as you go would be a multi-million dollar project. It would be huge. That'd be very expensive and hard to do.
How many leaks a year of this size are we having?
Of that size? Oh, not that many. There's
oh, good.
One a year, one every other year kind of a thing on a main line like this. Normally, like I say, they're the laterals.
Yeah.
And we have half a dozen of those at least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is there any like maintenance that needs to be done that we haven't been doing on them? I mean, I know they're, well, when I looked at it, you guys were like, I don't know, 6-7-8 feet down there.
Yeah.
Is there any maintenance that we can do on it that may extend it another?
You know, there's not a lot of maintenance you can do on an underground water line like that.
I wouldn't know.
I'll tell you the big thing is for us is to try not to shut the system down and turn it on, shut it down, turn it on.
The water hammer.
That can water hammer if you do it too fast. And just the fact that you're putting pressure on something and stretching it and then releasing that pressure and it relaxes, and then stretching it. And that's our pressurized irrigation system. Every year we drain it. So everything kind of relaxes underneath the ground. Then we energize it again every year and everything gets tight. And it's that flex that's the worst thing for your water system. The best thing is to turn it on, leave it on. Let it be in a static situation where that pressure remains constant. That's the best thing for the water system.
Was that pressurized irrigation? Wasn't that?
No, this was drinking water.
So it wouldn't have had the flex.
No. Okay. We were thinking when we got the call, hey, we just energized the PI. It's probably the PI line. And unfortunately, it was the culinary.
One thing that I'm just thinking of now is we shut that system down, and I didn't even think about the hydrants in that area. Maybe we next time we shut something like that down, at least let the fire department know, hey, this hydrant, or this section of hydrants are out.
That's a good idea.
I didn't even think of that until the culinary, and then it was like, you know, had we had, because we had a structure fire up at Alpine Thursday, I believe it was, and you know, nobody knows when the next fire is going to come in, but I would hate for the guys to get there, expect water, and not have it. And if they know, then you know, there's other equipment that we can call in and you know to help us, or we know that we're going to have to lay the lines in way behind. Or.
Yeah. And in that old part of town, that's a good point. We had one fire hydrant that was turned off, and it was right in front of where the leak was, where we were repairing. The next hydrant down was not the bulb. Right next to us to the east.
Yeah.
It was the next street over.
Well, it was good.
And it was energized.
Many guys that you did, and you could have just said, go hook up to that. So. Yeah.
So, that's a good point. So we'll.
I didn't, like I said, I didn't think of that. But
yeah. We only had one hydrant out of service during that time.
How many homes were affected?
Initially, there were about six, but we had to go an extra set of valves to shut down because the valves in that part of town leak. So we can't dial the valves all the way shut. So we have to go to the next set of valves, which takes more people out of service. And I think it probably was about 10 at that point. So.
And did you pre-warn? I'm sorry. Did you pre-warn those guys before you shut the water down? Did you go knock on the door and say, "Hey, we're going to be shutting"?
It was so early in the
morning. Did you just shut it down and they came out in their bathrobes and said, "Where's my water?"
Most of them just came out and said, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" Okay. Well, we have this water leak, and so we did get it on Facebook. We did do some noticing that way. Tried to update it. Yeah. It's really hard to get estimated times to bring the system back up. That was one of the questions. Hey, when is this going to be operational? And it's really hard when you're in the middle of the project to know that, hey, we've got 1 hour left or 2 hours left. But we do our best to guess that, and we'll post that as soon as we can get an idea. But sometimes we don't know. So
okay. Do those fire hydrant valves ever need to be replaced?
Fire hydrant valves need to, and they need to be exercised. The fire hydrants, that's something you can do maintenance on, and we should be.
Is that the city's responsibility or the fire department's responsibility?
We work with the fire department to do that.
In terms of money, who pays?
we exercise the hydrants.
They exercise
each year for the ISO rating and all that. We're required to go out there and
And so if a valve is bad, who pays for replacing it?
It's our system, so we would pay for it because it's our system. Yeah,
if we have a bad hydrant, then we just make a note and send it to Jeff or Public Works.
Okay.
It's either we haven't done one this year, so
yeah. How much does that cost?
It depends on what the issue is. If we have to dig it up and replace it, it's several thousands of dollars to do that. So, and we do have some old hydrants in that part of town. Again, that's the oldest part of the city.
We actually have some hydrants that need to be replaced. If you look at a hydrant, they have the big port on them. That's called a steamer, and that's what our supply line hooks to. If you go down into this section of town, the old way was to put two hoses on the end caps, two and a half or 3-inch hose, and so they were saving money back in the days and didn't buy them with the steam port on it. So actually, one day, I mean, we're okay, we can make it work, but
it's better to have.
But it is better. So like in your neighborhood, you'll all see the modern, but in the old. Okay,
you had a question.
Just on water restrictions. So we've implemented a lot of restrictions. And I know we had this problem last year, and we've already had it again this year, right? Which is that people have an eagle eye on us, wanting to see what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, which brings to my question again is there a any way that we can have some control over our own water system? So that way, if it is raining, or if it is twice in a row, and Wilkinson's isn't out for another 6 days, we can do something.
Yeah, we need to get with Wilkinson and coordinate that. So we've done that in the past where it's rained, so our crews go out, somebody turns off a system. We have so many little, small, individual systems that to remember, oh, I got this one, and then have Chris come back, Wilkinson come back and say, oh, I need to re-energize these systems. We've had it where some of them didn't get turned back on. The grass burns up. Then you put twice as much water, and it takes a month at least to get that grass back. And so we're trying to avoid that. But yes, I understand we are under the microscope, and we need to set the example and conserve where we can. Now, we've had a lot of wind lately, and that wind dries out the sod more than you can imagine. That's the number one thing, is wind. You know, people think, oh, don't water in the daytime, you know, because it's, you know, sunny. Well, it's not the sun that dries your sod out the most. It is the wind. And so people should water when it's not windy. But the golf course was parched, and the golf guys were saying, hey, please let us have more water, because the wind is just killing us. And so even though we got rain, it really was not quite enough to keep the sod where it should be, so we should have watered. But we need to be careful that we conserve. We need to communicate that, let residents know, hey, guys, we're watering here because of, you know, if Chris Wilkinson came and he put fertilizer in all the parks, he wanted to run the systems. It's the beginning of the year. He wants to test all the heads, make sure it's all operational. So he wanted to run the whole system. I came in last Saturday. Chris Wilkinson was here. He was working in the city, testing everything. So he's doing a lot of work on the front end of the season to make sure it's operational. So we need to communicate that.
And are we going to hire enforcement officers for this year?
We need to, yes. We have not yet. We're looking for some people that can help us out there.
And could they help with that as well then, as far as making things sure things are turned back on if we turn them off for any reason?
They might be able to. Typically, the enforcement person is a younger person that just can drive around at odd times. It might be harder for them to understand the water systems and which ones should be on, which ones should be off. We might need a different person for that. Yeah.
How many weeks last year did we have?
Can you speak in your mic?
Yeah. How many weeks last year did we have an enforcement officer, and how many of them were there?
We only had one enforcement officer, and he probably came in May. Maybe the end of May, through October. He was here through the end of the year.
I heard at first about warnings and things like that given out, but I never heard anything after it. Was he pretty consistent through October giving warnings?
Yeah, we had hundreds and hundreds of warnings. We had several fines.
Okay.
I don't know the exact number on fines, but we can get that to you as well. But yeah, he was active.
He was pretty active. Okay.
Yeah.
So can you report back in 2 weeks then how your conversations with Mr. Wilkinson go, and let us know what your plan is?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to talk for a minute before we go into exec session about our watering restrictions this year. So I think I sent an email to you guys. We had the state's water recommendation schedule on our website, which is inconsistent with what we're asking the residents to do. So David and I talked about removing the state's recommendations from our website so that they don't get confused. So in the past, we had said that we were following the state's recommendation. We're actually not following it anymore.
We're more than the state.
More strict.
So
We're less strict, aren't we?
We're
less strict than the state.
We're less strict than the state,
yes.
Which
yes.
allows them to water more
yes,
often.
Yes, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yes.
So there's more watering allowed under...
and we've actually had residents already comment to us, hey, you're actually making it so that I have to water every other day. I might could go 3 days. Yeah. If I could follow the state guidelines, I would water probably less than what you're making us do with your restrictions. The tough part is following this state's water restrictions and enforcing it. That gets very complicated. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how our enforcement person would be able to say, oh, that was 3 days ago, that was 2 days, you know, that we have to have a very simple regulation.
And I think we need to stick with it. We've tried so many different methods of trying to get people to conserve. In my opinion, none of them have worked very well. But if we keep going back and forth, the residents just get confused. So we're sticking with what we had last year. And we've been talking about this for years, but at some point we need to do some serious discussion about whether we bite the bullet and meter or we continue to kick the can down the road. So,
could we have the storm drain discussion before we go to close?
Can we do what?
Can we have the storm drain, the storm water issue?
Take about 7 minutes. That's okay.
And just one other comment, if I might, Mayor and Council, on the irrigation system, turning the system on and off. I think Jenny was questioning that. One of our issues, if we have someone do that, it takes about one person about 2 days to go turn stuff off. Then it takes another 2 days to turn it back on. And so we have kind of a limited amount. If we try to go into restrictions, we run into scheduling problems of it on and off in time. There's many, many of these in just little planter strips where a 9-volt battery is running the timer. You unplug it, then when you go back, you plug it back in, you got to reprogram everything. And we don't have, like in your garage, where you go out and push a button or flip a switch and you can shut it on, or turn it on, shut it off, put it in range, delay. So that's kind of one of our issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah, and that's, I think we talked a little bit this last year, but it may make sense for the city to talk about, on those, especially on those park strips where those are so time consuming, do we start gradually a little bit every year making those park strips more of a xeriscaping where they just have a drip system like Highland has done, so that way you're not having to do that.
David and I have approached that. I mean, it's trying to get a cost and a budget together for what that would take to do that. But that has been brought up, yes. Okay. It's a good idea, I think. Now, very quickly then on the stormwater, every 5 years we're required to renew our permit with the Division of Environmental Quality. This is that year, and each year they put more stringent guidelines we need to meet, and we're going to attempt to get that put together. We have to have this approved and submitted back to the state by July 1st. Part of our storm management program is our preparation and design the guidelines that we actually use. And there is a committee that is part of that. And I think some of this information came out to you. Colleen sent that. So you could review it. It has the actual permit language for the renewal. But our advisory committee for the process of developing the plan, as per our current plan, is the City Council. They are the advisory committee. They have input from citizens, and they have communications with anybody that has it. And we also have website, we have communications, they call us or whatever, and we get that information also. But if you have any suggestions or guidelines or concerns with the new program, which the new rules were in there, that it's called the Fact Sheet Statement of Basis, that document that came in outlines kind of what our new rules are going to be. And we're, like I say, we'll address those, but if we can get any input from you, if you are interested, we will surely try to implement what we can. Part of the program that's coming up, they're making brief outline, I guess, typical stormwater system. People collect the water off parking lots, streets, put it in pipes, run it down to the river, the lake, the ocean, discharge it. The EPA has now said that's not the direction they want. They want water collected on site, percolated back into the ground as it was pre-development time. This is going to be a real big headache for most communities. And a lot of communities have phased into that. Cedar Hills did, in which we collect water, we put it in a retention basin, percolate it back in the ground. Well, they want to get away from large retention basins. They want small individual lots to contain water in that area. So that's their new directive.
When do we have to comply with that?
Now, this doesn't mean we have to change everything we already have.
Okay.
So we're fortunate that we don't have a lot of development. And so, but we do have, we have met many of the requirements that they are now requiring others to do. So we're fortunate that way as a community. We're putting most of our water into the ground, with the exception of the older part of Cedar Hills that we send in the ditch, and theoretically it has a potential of reaching Utah Lake. And because of that, they're also changing. Currently, Cedar Hills is a major pollutant, according to our plan, is sediment. Salt that we put on the roads in the winter, the dust comes off tires of cars, etc. That's now changed, and it's because of the Jordan River drainage, which is a protected source, their drainage now. It's nitrogen and phosphate. And so we have to incorporate those into our plan, how we're going to reduce that or monitor it. Now, it's not required that we monitor it. They said expect in the next permit that we will receive a maximum daily amount that we can discharge, and then we're going to have to, at that time, probably monitor it.
Is that for just the city or for all residences in the city?
This is a city program.
Okay.
But part of the new guidelines is that we have already had an education program, which we put it in our newsletter, on our website, family festival. We teach the fourth grade elementary schools. Now we need to make more personal interaction, contact with residents, businesses, industry, particularly on these two items, irrigation, over-irrigating and washing nitrogen fertilizer into the storm drain. That's the kind of stuff they want to address.
So the requirement will be to the permit holder, which is the city. So the city would be under the obligation to comply with the regulations. And it's not just the city, it's every city, but it's also, as a heads up, Timpanogos Special Service District. Because they discharge to Utah Lake, they also have to have, the regulations are changing for them for limits on phosphorus and nitrogen as well. And for the district, for the sewer district, that means a mechanical form of nitrogen removal and phosphorus removal, which the plant as it sits now can't do. If the city were to exceed its discharge limits, we would also have to have some form of way to remove the phosphorus and nitrogen,
right,
which would be extremely costly. So we're going to have to keep our eye on this, because it could end up costing the city a lot of money.
And how do we measure this?
So they take samples, and they measure the parts per million of nitrogen in the water. And if it exceeds a certain amount, then...
So does that mean we reduce the amount that we fertilize our parks? Is that the idea?
Yeah, parks.
Possibility, yes.
Residential homes.
Currently, we don't have to measure, but they said prepare to start doing that.
And for the city to measure, we would go out and take samples to do that. So.
As a general rule, what they have done is, in the past, it says that we will train all employees annually in stormwater pollution. Now the language changed and says we will ensure that we do. So ensure is their new word. We have to ensure that contractors are in compliance with the guidelines. It's not that we'll monitor it. We are now responsible to make sure they do that. And that includes, like, they added in new language that says all new hires will be trained before they can go out and work. So we have some of those items.
Jeff, can you include this in your monthly management report, a update, if you will, in terms of our getting ready to comply with the new storm drain and EPA requirements?
Yeah, I'll see what I can do on that.
Okay. Yes. Council, any questions for Jeff?
One more comment. The other directive that's been coming down is that the EPA has hired a large number of new inspectors, thousands, tens of thousands. I heard 40-plus thousand. And they have been out, and they have addressed with the state of Utah that they are not enforcing the guidelines strict enough. And so they are now auditing all of the jurisdictions, and these audits have included some significant fees, penalties for violations. The most recent one that was settled was Salt Lake County, and they had I understand it was $1 million penalty. They negotiated down. They agreed to pay $250,000 and hire 4 to 6 full-time stormwater employees. This has happened in not only jurisdictions, but contractors, et cetera. And so we've been told to expect to be audited.
So can you and Mr. Bunker then start putting together a proposal of what Cedar Hills needs to do in order to do well in an audit?
That was my next comment was our biggest problem area is our golf course maintenance building, which we're in the process of trying to resolve that.
Okay.
But that would be probably our biggest problem at this time.
Why don't you put together a proposal of what we will need to do in order to receive a favorable audit?
I think we're in pretty good shape.
I know we are.
In other jurisdictions, but we do have that one point that I wanted everybody to be aware of, that, and we are in the process of trying to resolve that.
So. Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. I need a motion to go into exec session, please.
What are we talking about? Pending leave?
Right there. 52-4-204.
Yeah.
Okay. I move that we go into closed session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205-1C to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation, and this closed session will be held in the Cedar Hills Community Center.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion seconded. Is there, let's have a roll call vote. Starting from my left, Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. All those that need to leave, leave. Those that can stay, stay. Chandler, can you just shut the door on your way out? Okay, great. We're back in regular session, ladies and gentlemen. I want to give you about almost a 10-minute break, okay? So let's be right back in our seats at 7 o'clock, ready to start. I think we'll have a relatively short session, so if we start early, we'll end early. Let's take a break.